Hi, and welcome to the Property Mom Podcast. I'm Delava, I'm a wife, a mother of two wonderful kids who are 5 and 3, and I'm what you'd call a property entrepreneur. And if you're just joining us for the first time, thanks so much for listening to this, and my hope is that you learn something new every time you're listening, as I've juggled the past few years between raising a family, property investing, development, refurbs, rent-to-rent, and educating, so my love for property runs really deep. This podcast is for anyone looking to get into property, build a portfolio of owned or managed properties, and build long-term wealth, whether as a side gig or if you eventually want to quit your job and run your own full-time business. You're definitely in the right place. Here you'll find discussions, ideas, strategies for UK property investing, and I'll be inviting guests as well to share their own experiences and to educate us. Now, on today's episode, I'm so excited to showcase our next podcast guest for the Black History Month series. Her name is Stephanie Taylor, and she's the co-founder of HMO Heaven and Rent to Rent Success. Now, Stephanie is a real property game changer. I don't know how she does it. She juggles her property entrepreneurship life so flawlessly. She hosts the hugely successful Rent to Rent Success podcast as well. She recently launched her own book, which is also called Rent to Rent Success, The Ultimate Guide to Creating Consistent Cash Flow, Escaping the 9-to-5, and Living Life on Your Own Terms. In addition, she's been featured on Entrepreneurship, Entrepreneur Magazine, The Telegraph, Property Investor Today, and on numerous property podcasts. She's a speaker, mentor, and she drops some really golden nuggets on this episode. She's truly a coach at heart, so do enjoy, and I'll catch you on the other side of this podcast. Welcome, Stephanie.
Hi, Dolly. It's amazing to be here. I love your show. We were just talking earlier. Everyone brings their own flavor to this, but what I love is that you go deep down into how people are doing it. Yeah. Which is really inspiring.
Oh, thank you, Stephanie. And I love your show as well. And it's so funny because I came across Stephanie, actually, because if you've listened to the show, you know that I always go on about somebody called Daniel Priestley, because he, I always say, got me down this path. And I saw a comment that Stephanie had left on maybe a post of his or something. I was like, oh, who's Stephanie? Went through and I saw everything she was doing. And I was like, wow, how do you have the time? Like, between the business, the property, the podcast, you know, the coaching, I was impressed. And you're constantly on the cycle. So how are you doing it?
Yeah, that is a great question, Dolly. And sometimes I ask myself the same thing. But it's been 5 years now, or almost 5 years that we've been doing all this. And so it took a long while to get our first VA on board. We're coming up to 2 years with the social media VA. We had a VA on the property side, and then we had a team on the property side. And then now I've got a VA helping me. And the one thing that changed everything was having the process for the whole thing. So we've got in Asana, we've got a board for because I've actually got one podcast, one live series soon to be made into a podcast. I'm also writing a book. We have 2 emails go out a week, and we have a series of videos that are always going out as well. So, but having those, like, she's got the podcast board and she progresses people along a known system. And at each step in the system, you know, I had done a screen share of what was supposed to be happening at that step. So that's really helped, because now I invite people who I'm really interested to speak to, and then Angelica does everything else. And the next time I see the person, I will be at the interview.
And that is awesome, Stephanie, because really, once you have systems and processes, then you can plug people down. And we're talking about not just your VAs, but even the guests can monitor, you know, all of the things you need from the guests. And that's amazing. And I can imagine that you also apply that to your business.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And that's been a game changer, because the reason is, though, Dolly, everything comes through failure. So I had a business, in inverted commas, it was more like a glorified hobby, But I didn't realize all of these things about systems, making things move outside of yourself, outsourcing the progress that a business, that nearly all businesses go through, and things like that. Didn't know all that, burnt myself out within 7 years. Yeah. And so this time when we started in business, so I thought, oh, business is not for me. But this time when we started in business, I knew from the start that we needed to get the processes, we needed to get the VA, we needed to outsource. I'm not the person to be doing the admin. That's not my strength. So it all comes through the failures.
Yes, I totally. And it's good to see that the process works, right? Because a lot of times people think, oh, you can just bypass it. But I remember somebody who told me there's a reason why there's structures. Even when you go into like corporate world, there's a reason why they have these things. It's because you can't work any other way. You can never scale. You can never be successful. You can't leverage. It just doesn't work. So good that you've settled that and you've gotten that all fixed. But let's go back into your story, because I always like to delve down into, you know, the person and how it is that you came to developing what you have now in property, because it hasn't been that long as well, has it?
No. And that's the really exciting thing as well, that I think, Dolly, it's coming up to 5 years that we started out in property. And, you know, so 5 years ago, I didn't know hardly any of the things that I now know. I would never have imagined in my wildest dreams that we would be doing these things. And, you know, I mentioned that we're writing this book, and I'm thick in that at the moment. But what came into my mind as you asked me this question was that the preface of the book is a little story, and I'm standing in one of our properties, and it's got 12 units in it. And I'm just looking around the room with my interior designer thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe it's the same room. It looked so dilapidated. It kind of had this sadness to it with all the, you know, kitchen units hanging off. It was a studio, kitchen units hanging off, the carpet really stained, just all sorts of just things just have been left there. And it just had a sadness to it where you would have felt sad for the person who was living there because it didn't look like a nice life.
I know.
And then we're there afterwards, and I went out in the outside the building later on, and I was talking to, I saw one of the neighbors was talking to our builder, and so I went over and we were talking, and she said, oh, what are you doing with the shop, addressing herself to the builder. And I said, oh, well, we haven't really decided what we're going to do with the shop. We're going to work that out. And you could see she was taken aback because she hadn't realized that I own the property. And it just made me think, I'm taken aback as well, because I would never have thought that I would own the property either. And just to actually answer the question and go back 5 years. So before I started this, I was working in financial services as a contractor. As I was saying to you, I did not think business was for me. Property, it all seemed like something for other people who had special skills or magical powers. And I wasn't even aware that consciously I was thinking, I wasn't consciously aware that I was thinking all these thoughts. It was only, there's often the moment for many people why they decide to get deeper into property. And for me, it was just like an ordinary moment that my mum called me up one morning and needed me. And I wasn't really there for her. I was more focused on, you know, my job and getting to work and other things. And it was just that realization that same day. I was sitting at my desk in the afternoon thinking about the day and how the presentation had gone. And I thought, oh, I'm living my life in a way that doesn't matter. I'm living my life for things that don't matter. The bank would have been absolutely fine without me, and my mum wouldn't. And what are my priorities? How do I want to live my life? And at the time I was 45, and I just thought, you need to make a change. And that fire in my belly to live in the way that I live to my values, if you want, to be able to be there for my mum and my family. It just made me, it made me brave enough to sort of think about it again.
So it's almost like you needed that motivating, you know, we talk about
what is your why? Why are you doing something? And you realize that connection with family, because it's true. The company, you know, like you're expendable, you know, it's one of those things where you come to realize one day, you're like, this hard work I'm doing. And the same thing happened. It's like, you know, I did a whole year, I sweat, blood and toil. And then in the end, the company was having issues. So all my bonus was pretty much just like that. Yeah. And I was like, what is all this work for? Like, what am I doing? Yeah. And it's interesting to find out that you had kind of the same epiphany where you just thought, you know, I need more of me time. Like, yeah.
And with the time, you want to put it to where you want to put it, because nobody's on their deathbed saying, oh, I wish I'd put in more hours at the bank. But there's millions of people all over the world who wish they'd realized sooner that they to put the hours into the things that are really meaningful for them. And that's what property gives you. And because I wasn't looking back on a whole load of successes, and I felt like you had to be Lord Sugar or Richard Branson to be in business. And I thought, how do I turn this commitment into an actual reality? How can I personally do something that's going to work? And that's where I started racking my brain and thinking, you know, kept it mulling over in my mind because the answer didn't come to me straight away. And then I thought, oh, property, because I know normal people who do property. Maybe I could do property. Property seems like something where you don't have to be a special business brain to get it. And so that's when I started going down that road and finding out all about property.
Okay, so that journey, I'm always interested in knowing how you got your first property, in a sense. What was the journey to that property? So this is, at this point, you probably haven't quit your job, right? You're still in the job, and then you're getting the education and you're getting the knowledge. Yeah. And then how did you then make that transition to get your first property? And then eventually, how did you then quit your job?
Yeah, that's such a good question. So I was still, you know, at the bank, and I was obsessed, Dolly. Before work, I would be listening to podcasts, property podcasts. There was only a few at that time. So I was listening to Inside Property Investing. I was just constantly blown away by what people were doing. In the evenings, I was living in Bristol at the time, and there were all these property events, as you know, and so I was going to different property events, again, my mind was totally blown with everything that was happening. And so I would change my mind like 20 times a week of, I'm going to go with this strategy. Oh yeah, no, this is the strategy. No, but eventually one day I went to one of these events, and it was talking rent to rent, and the guys, you know, they seemed like they were doing something extraordinary, but they seemed like ordinary guys at the same time. And I thought, oh my gosh, I think I could do it, because they were talking about how they'd gone from their jobs, and then they were talking about each property was tens of thousands of pounds on each property profit and over the contracts. And I was just, the properties kept coming across the screen, and I was sitting there thinking, wow.
Yeah.
And normally I would have just said to myself, oh, that's a scam. That's just for property people. That's just for business people. That's not for people like me. But because I was feeling a little bit different, I thought, maybe I can do it. And then as I looked into it more and saw the level that people were doing it to, I said, yes, I could definitely do this. I could do this much better. And so I then started, I was living in Bristol, and I had this idea in my mind that Newport was the place in Wales. So it's about an hour's drive away. So in the weekends, I would be coming over to do viewings. And from what I'd read and heard from people, I thought, well, it's going to take ages before you get your first deal, Steph. So, you know, start looking and asking. So I was coming across, and Dolly, I know I look like I'm confident because I'm on all these videos, but honestly, I'm a shy person. And the idea of going into all of these agents and talking about this thing, which I hadn't totally got clear in my mind, and it being the first one, I was just terrified. Mm-hmm. And I'd come over to Bristol one Saturday, on the train. That was it. I'd taken the train over, gone over to Newport, and I'd had a meeting with a letting agent, and we'd looked at three properties, but I'd really blown it because I'd said something whereby she didn't really speak to me two twos after that. It was something to the effect of that I didn't want her to manage the properties, and that's what she had been.
That's what she is, like, she's the agent.
Yeah, exactly. So rookie mistake number one. So I can't remember exactly what I'd said, but I'd taken away any benefit for her with just an offhand remark. And so I felt quite low once I got back into the centre of town. And there's an opportunity there because I live somewhere else. Now is the time to be able to go around to all these other agents. They're all in the same street. And I was standing there outside, you know, putting the weight from one foot to the other, thinking, oh, shall I go in? Shall I not go in? Shall I go in? Shall I not go in? Eventually, I had to have a word to myself and go in. And that turned out to be the first two properties.
Oh, wow.
That we got from that, from the same landlord that we got from that little visit there.
Yeah. And this was in which location?
In Newport in Wales.
Yeah. Okay, so you had identified, because I always talk about the gold mine area. You'd identified an area that works for the strategy that you were going to apply. Yeah. And then you went doing the viewings, talking to the agents, because it's a lot of people don't know that you get quite good properties from agents. You know, it's always this idea that you have to find the landlord or you have to find direct. It's good to find direct vendor, no doubt. Yeah. But I think starting out, those are kind of second level. You know, I think just going to the agents and building that rapport with them, and just, you know, I always say it's transactional. They're just trying to find someone to hand the properties over to that will take care of the property, right? Mm-hmm. So if you can assure them that you are responsible, you know, if you have a full-time job, you know, all those things help. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a full-time job, then you have to get somebody who can to act as a guarantor and all of that. So it's just the practicalities around getting that first property, you know.
And you know what, Dolly? I think mums have a real advantage. Mm-hmm. Because if you're coming there as a mum, you've got a certain look, you know, especially if you're, you know, slightly older mum in my case. It's like you do not look like an untrustworthy, you know, exactly. White boy sort of style. You do look like somebody who's trustworthy. You're used to managing a house. You've got lots of ideas for the property. People can get that sense from you, and I think that really helps us.
Yes, it does. It definitely does. And I like the fact that you brought up the mom's aspect, right? Because, you know, and not to say that if you have, you know, you're of any other demographic, you can't get a bro. Of course we know you can. And guys, you know, guys are always very bullish about these things, happy to walk in and just kind of, you know, a lot of guys are like that. But I feel like sometimes moms can sort of step back a bit and just, you know, kind of just relax and just be like, yeah, you know, who's going to listen to me? Yeah. And why would they, you know, but actually just go out there and just be, you know, because I think we get stuck in our own echo, in our own sort of system, our own bubble.
Yeah.
You know?
And what made that come sharper into focus was, mm-hmm. I do these series called Rent to Rent Rockstars, where I'm interviewing people who've been doing well with Rent to Rent. And one of them, Maria, is a busy mum of three. Okay. And I had such great feedback from her episode. But
I listened to that, actually. I did. I loved it.
Her
real nature, like how she was going to get that first property and how she freaked out she was and how you guided. Yeah, that was,
But also the other thing that she said was, I said, well, how did you get past the agent, first of all? But how did it work with the landlord? And she just said, oh, yeah, she said the landlord fell in love with me. The landlord. And that is exactly what it is, because the landlord is also a woman. She's a mum. She'd had some bad tenants before. She and Maria really connected. And I think we forget a lot of the times, or people forget when they're going into this, a lot of times it's about the relationship, the connection, the trust is number one. That comes before experience, because otherwise nobody would get there first, because they haven't got any experience.
Indeed. And you brought out a really good point, which is the going for the viewings, right? Yeah. So, you know, let's take it back one step about getting that first property. You literally have to go for the view. I always encourage people that I help through to say that, look, go for the viewings. You could just send out the emails, yes, but no, go meet people. You don't know where you're going to make that connection, right? And this is a good example you're giving.
Yes. And the other thing that people often forget is you've got a unique flavor. So you might not have, you know, any properties yet. You might not have property experience, but you've got your own things. Like, for example, Maria was is an IT manager. So that's a very diligent role. Yeah. She's got three kids. She's got things that are unique to her that actually are interesting to the landlord and the letting agent. You know, we had one lady who's a nurse. And obviously people love that, and that she's going to have medical colleagues coming to stay there. I had somebody else who worked at a bank, and all of the people who go to work at the bank have to go through a lot of due diligence beforehand. So that's a better quality of tenant if you've got your colleagues who are contracting coming to stay. So you've always got something that actually is a selling point that you just totally take for granted or don't bring to the fore.
True. So very useful, Stephanie. I love the way we're kind of deep diving. We're telling the story, but we're almost like coaching at the same time. You know, really good value. Okay, so now you've picked up your first two properties. Yeah. Yay. You know.
Yay.
And then, you know, how do you then go from that, you know, to then quitting your job? So
Yeah, well, it was kind of easy for me because I am older. My son is growing up. I had moved to Bristol at the time, but I had just chosen Bristol. And I thought, well, I can move to Newport, because moving to Newport obviously is going to cut my costs drastically, my living expenses. I've got a bit of savings. And I'm one of those people who just believe that everything's going to be okay. So I just thought, well, if it doesn't work out, if it does work out, great. If it doesn't work out, I can just get another job. And also my head was just property 24/7, 365. So I was going to work and I was really struggling to concentrate on work. So they offered me to extend my contract. And the sensible thing to do would be extend the contract, add a bit more to the savings, do the other thing on the side. But it all depends what your circumstances are. Like if I had young children still with me, I maybe would have gone a different way. But because my life stage means that it's just me, I was okay to just say, no, I can't do it. I'm putting all of my time, effort, energy into property. So I just gave up my job. When we got the first two, I actually moved across to Newport, and I finished the contract to when it was due, moved across to Newport, and moved into one of those. Both of the properties were empty. It was a 5-bed and a 4-bed HMO, and both of them were empty. And I moved into one of them and oversaw the refurb and all the rest of it, and eventually moved out once they were all tenanted.
Wow. Ah, so that's interesting. So it was rent to rent, but you kind of still were doing a refurb. Because you just
yes, oh my gosh,
that's interesting. Because when I think of renting, I tend to look at it that the landlord is responsible for some of these, you know, like uplifts, and so I do try to pass on as much as I can. It's difficult sometimes, but it's interesting that you priced in the refurb and you're still able to, I guess, you work out your payback period and all of that. But how did you work that out?
Well, we spent way too much, Dolly, because we didn't know what we were doing. And we just moved over. Oh, I had just moved over. Nikki knows a lot more about refurb than I do. But we were both there, and the landlord had said that he had somebody who could do both houses, paint them for £800. And we were like totally amazed, because how could anybody paint a house for £800? Anyway, the painter came, and you can imagine the conversation. We were sort of going around with sort of bright-eyed and bushy-tailed saying, oh, this wall's going to be this colour, this wall's going to be this colour.
Oh, my gosh.
All the woodwork's going to white gloss. And because they had sort of the brown wood stained doors and skirtings, which didn't look great. Sometimes that can look good, but these didn't look good. So we're having everything going to white gloss. And so by the time we've gone around the house, you know, with different rooms with different colours and all of this, he just said, look, love, no, I can't do this. What I do is I just splash a bit of, I can't do the accent, I just splash a bit of magnolia floor ceiling, sounding like carpet, floor ceiling, carpet everywhere. And no, it wasn't, you know, so by the time we found somebody, which took a little while, the price was sky high, because it was quite a big contractor and they didn't really want these small jobs and it was priced accordingly. But we just said, you know what, come and do it because we need to get these properties moving. And that was where we paid for our first education.
It's true. Because if you don't learn through coaching, you're going to learn through experience. And it depends on which word. Experience is always more expensive, it seems.
Yeah, exactly. But we spent a lot on them. We still made a lot of money because the rent we paid was very low to the landlord because he just wanted them off his sheet. Yeah. He's an old school guy, a lovely guy. And we, you know, I'm always so grateful to him because he took a chance. He saw these girls coming around and we were saying, oh, yes, we'd change the carpet, wouldn't we, Nikki? We'd change this, wouldn't we? And we'd do this. And he must have just been totally bemused. But as I said earlier, you know, I think he could just get the sense that our hearts were in the right place. He told us years later that he wondered if we'd last because, you know, you've got to have some staying power in this game. And, you know, he kind of knew we were new to it. But since then, originally he signed up for 3 years and he's since then extended for 5 years. We asked him if he would do 5 years, but he said, no, he's only going to do three first of all. So altogether we'll have had them for 8 years. So they've been such amazing properties for us.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think it's interesting the way you said you transitioned out of your job. And I see this happen all the time. You almost get to a point of obsession with property. And at that point, you realize I'm doing this job a disservice.
Yes.
I
need to leave.
I remember the same thing where I'm at the office, lunchtime, looking through catalogs, looking through online, doing everything. And at some point I said, it's not actually fair that I'm sort of so divided, I can barely pay attention to work, you know. So it's very, very interesting. And at that point, you know, it's time. But importantly, you already had an idea of your exit plan in the sense you knew you had the two properties that were going to generate the income, right? Because what you don't want to do is to quit your job and not have something that's going to be bringing in income. Right?
Yeah, although having said that, we weren't taking money out of the business at that stage. We were just putting everything there because obviously we had to pay back for these refurbs. So we were living off our savings and we knew we would be living off our savings. I can't remember how long it carried on, but I want to say a year. 9 months. I can't remember. But then we said, okay, the business can now pay you £500 a month each. Then it can pay you we did it by when you've got so many properties, the business is going to pay you this much. When you've got so many properties, it's going to pay you that much. So we actually take quite a relatively small amount still out of the business because that business, we've been buying properties, we've been refurbishing properties that we own, we've been doing loads of things. We're investing a lot of the money from the business in more.
Yes. And isn't that so? You go from the rent to rent, you build up a lot of that initial capital, and you can use it to buy property. And that's the journey, isn't it? It's almost like a roadmap where you. Yes. You know, after the rent, then you buy your first property based on the income generated from your rent business.
And it's a couple of things, isn't it? Because you've got the income, which is amazing, but you've also got the experience and the confidence. And we wouldn't have got our first bank borrowing if we weren't doing what we were doing with HMO Heaven. Although they do say that the banks don't look at, they like to see you've got experience of owning properties, owning properties to let out of the same asset class. So the first property that we bought in Newport is a commercial property. And we thought, okay, we'll just buy it cash and then we'll quickly refinance it out. well, quickly refinance don't really go together. Especially when it's your first commercial purchase. But one of the things that really helped us was all the experience, because, you know, your broker, I hadn't realized how important this is, but your broker paints a picture of your experience and situation and circumstances and what you do to the lenders, and then lenders make their decision accordingly.
Yes.
So we were lucky that our experience with HMO Heaven and similar properties and refurbishments and all of that really paid off to help us to get the borrowing on that property and on some other properties that we bought then.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And the point you made about the broker is so important, because the broker makes or breaks your journey. Honestly, I think they're almost pivotal to the progress you make. And the point I wanted to make around that was, I've had some brokers that went cheap, that were, you know, because I was looking at the amount that I would spend, you know, I would get, you know, how it is where you get a mortgage and then they charge you a fee. And then I met a broker who was charging about three times the normal fee. But after using him for 2 years now, I totally get it. Yeah. Like, if you're lucky, you can get a broker that's cheap, that also delivers, good on you. But, you know, I found that there is what you said about them painting a picture. They almost create your image for you, you know, and then position you to the right lenders who would then offer you the mortgage.
Yeah. And they have the relationships.
Yes.
They have the relationships. And as you said, they know which one, they know which way to go based on your situation and your circumstances. They know where to put you.
Yeah.
Stay worthwhile. But that's what you realize in this game, isn't it? You need specialists, and you have to be willing to pay, basically. Anything else is just wasting money.
It is. So, and then the other thing, you've mentioned your son a few times, but how old is he, for one? I'm quite interested to know.
Like, well, he's 30, Dolly, and he's just,
you have a 30-year-old son.
it's crazy, isn't it? He's actually 31. No, 30 this year, because it's because of lockdown. So we didn't get to celebrate it in the way that we wanted to. Grateful to property is because when I was growing up with Alex as a 19-year-old, 18, I had Alex when I was just about to turn 19, and it was such a struggle. I used to have to, and I didn't have the mindset, I didn't have the confidence. I had a lot of shame and mingled into it, and I used to go to every week to collect my income support. I started off working, I feel I have to say this, so you can still, I still want to explain. So I started off working immediately or soon after having him. But because of what I've just described to you, I hadn't done my A-levels. I was partway through them. I hadn't completed or taken the exams. And I, as I said, I didn't have a lot of confidence, because sometimes you can get further than you should do because you've got confidence. Yeah. And I was doing all these low paid admin jobs and dropping Alex off to nursery 6 a.m. you know, with the buggy, and dropping him off, getting him back, you know, late at night, it's dark again. And he didn't seem very happy there. And one of the days I was talking to one of the staff, and a look just came across their face, only for a second, and I thought, oh, that's my decision.
You're taking him out.
I'm taking him out, because I need to look after him myself at home, because this doesn't seem happy. I'm getting this sense that they don't care for him. And the money obviously wasn't there either. So I would just be more or less the same position whether I was working or not financially. But there's a lot more to life than finances. So I stopped doing it, but then I would have to go every week with my income support, it was called at the time, book, and go to the post office. It was all in cash then. It wasn't like, I'm guessing it's different nowadays. So a queue up with everybody and all of these little things They just look
away from, yes.
Yeah, they just chip away. You sort of hold your head and a little bit lower. It's not really a conscious thing. And but the thing that I just stands out that I always remember is that I would go to the supermarket with my, obviously with my purse. And I would also have to take a calculator just to make sure, because things change price from 1 week to the next. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I went to the supermarket now, I wouldn't know the price of anything. But at the time, I used to know the price. And I would put the things on, and I started taking my calculator because I didn't want to make a mistake, because the worst thing, or it would just feel so humiliating to get to the till and you've not got enough and everybody's standing in the queue looking at you with mixture pity and impatience. So that was my life. So when Alex grew up, he grew up in a house of love, but it was also scarcity. Things didn't feel easy. Things felt challenging. And so I wasn't able to show him the way of like abundance and financial success. And I was not able to mirror all of that for him. And I think your children learn most by watching. And so in the last 5 years, where we've been really able to help him and guide him, and he's just bought his first property. And he saved up himself. He didn't have any financial assistance. I mean, we would have loved to have given. But he's just very, that's his mindset. He wants to save himself, choose the area where he can afford to live and get it to what he can. But we were able to encourage him, my sister and I, and show him, you know, lots of things that he may not have otherwise have thought of. And I don't think if we weren't in property that he would have bought his own house now.
Yeah. Because now you know all the sort of shortcuts and you know the mindsets, you know, these things are so important. And it's funny that you say this, because it's amazing, because I didn't even know about your history like that, right? And that how you've kind of pulled up, and you know, obviously you got a full-time job eventually.
Yes, yes, yes,
got in city or wherever corporate you were working. And then, you know, eventually found property. And and I guess that's why property is so popular, because people see the transformation in your life. Like, it's, you know, I always say I'm like a property evangelist in this sense.
Yes.
They see like the massive transformation, you know, the confidence. Mm-hmm. And I say that it's, you see, I think when, especially when you go into business as well, there are many aspects of you that then have to improve upon. This is what we talk about, the continuous learning. Because if you're shy and you're not confident, then how are you going to pitch? How are you going to talk to agents? How you, you know, you have to develop all those things. And guess what? You only develop them when you do them.
There's no yes. That is such a good point, because, you know, we all start off in, I'm getting slightly different point, but it's similar. We all start off in confusion and we tell ourselves, okay, I can't move forward because I don't know. But as you just said, you can only know afterwards. You get the clarity from the experience of doing. You learn, you evolve, you become better. And then suddenly you're on the other side and people are saying things like, oh, well, it was easy for you because.
And you know, walking the walk, it wasn't that easy.
No. It wasn't that easy. But the thing that makes it hard is not the actual things that you do. There are, once you know the strategy and you have somebody like you to show you what to do, what the hard thing is fighting yourself, keeping your mind on track and moving forwards. That is where you have to spend your energy so that you can do the things you need to do.
I know. So Stephanie, amazing. I've loved this. I feel, like I said, I feel like we've dropped so many like nuggets. And then for you, where do you see your business going? Like, what big dream do you have in terms of the direction you want to take your business? But then another thing I was going to ask was, for somebody who wants to get in, you know, and is starting off and a bit confused, what advice do you have for them? So it's kind of two questions to completely unrelated, but yeah.
For the direction of our business, I'll start off with the first question first. So for the direction of our business, We've got three parts of the business. So we've got HMO Heaven, where we're managing properties like the rent to rent. And with that business, we want to grow that business. We've got just over 100 tenants at the moment. We've got a member of staff. We've got all different members of the team. We've got a member of staff that we employ permanently. And then we've got other members of the team that we contract to work with. And we've just taken on three new properties in the lockdown, because one of our landlords had all sorts of problems with whoever he'd chosen to go with. And so we've taken on 3 6-bed HMOs, and we just want to grow that business. And we're very picky with the ones that we choose to take on, because like we've talked about today, there's lots of things to do with the relationships that you have with the property owners. You need to all be the same values, on the same page. And obviously it's the same with tenants, but it's the owners who you meet first, tenants come later. So we're going to grow HMO Heaven business. Mm-hmm. The second part of the business is that we're buying our own properties. So we've bought just over 28 units. We've got a mixture of HMOs, multi-unit blocks, and commercial to residential conversions. So for example, one of the commercials, that first commercial property that we bought, mm-hmm. we've got planning to turn it into 4 self-contained flats. Mm-hmm. At the moment, it's on a lease with a commercial tenant, and they're moving out next March. And so next March, we're then going to transform it into the 4 flats. We've got another property that we bought on exchange with delayed completion, one of those creative strategies where you don't need to have a huge amount of money to get started buying the actual assets. And that is actually 4 flats. It's a partial conversion to 4 flats. So we're finishing that conversion. And the one that I mostly get excited about is it's 12 units. It's a multi-unit block, and we love these multi-unit blocks. Again, this strategy we came into by accident, but what we saw was that buying multi-unit blocks, you get so much more value for money. The unit price of each unit is lower, the rent is the same. You couldn't buy 12 units for the same price that we're buying 12. You've only got one place to go to, not 12. You've only got one roof, not 12, etc. And so we want to double that. So we've got 28 units just now, and we want to double that to over 50 units. And within that those properties that we own, we want to move as well as into social housing. Now, what we're seeing is that with social housing, or the way that we are looking into it at the moment, our income would actually go down. So it is something we want to build up, because everything's not always, only about money. And so it's one of the things we want to do is do good with our business. And so that is definitely going to be an aspect of what we're doing, and that's something that we want to build up. And the third business that we've already touched on a little bit is the rent to rent success business, where we're showing others how to get on the same path in an ethical way. Because you know, Dolly, that a lot of the time trainers get a bad name, and partially it's deserved, because some trainers do a very bad job and they're not in it for the with the intention of helping people. They're in it with the intention of making money, and they're not in it for the intention of helping people. And they don't show the ethical way, where you put in a good service and you get out a good profit. And that's where we want to show people the ethical way, that it's a win-win-win for everybody involved. And so that's the third business that we want to grow. And as part of that business, I am wrapping up, as part of that business, because we want to share that message, not just for the people who are paying for the program, but just for everybody who's like where I was perhaps, and you're not in a position to sort of drop money on the program, but you do want to move forward. And so we've got the podcast, the Rent to Rent Success podcast, the YouTube channel, and I'm just writing the book, which is kind of exciting.
Yes. And apparently writing the book opens the door to Narnia. Like, it's like,
yes.
Yeah. So all the best. And definitely looking forward to when you launch your new book. And so you are kind of the public face in a sense, because we don't get to see your sister quite as much, right? So, but yeah, it's good that you have your roles defined as well. And, you know, you are strong in what you do, and she's clearly strong the aspects that she does as well. So good
on yeah, you. She's amazing. And I really hope that she will come out more, because she's actually going to have an episode on our podcast soon introducing Nikki T and everything.
She wants to know the other side of the...
She's super talented, honestly. She's really an exceptional talent in terms of like operations and spreadsheets. She's a detailed person. She's a critical thinker. She's totally different totally different to me. But I'm just aware I didn't answer your advice part. The advice I would give to people who want to get started is don't wait. I used to be like a professional procrastinator. And action is so much easier than the thinking about the action. In fact, when you think about the action, you give yourself all sorts of nightmare scenarios that rarely, rarely happen, anything near as bad. So my advice is really to take action, to back yourself up 100%. Because when you hear what you say to yourself, you wouldn't say those things to your best friend. You know, like, you're not worth it. Maybe other people are not saying this. You're not worth it. You can never do this.
There's an internal chastisement of yourself that no, you can't do it, you know, you can't. Yeah, they can do it, but you can't, you know. But yeah, that's a good point about just do it, just do it. Oh wow, thank you, Stephanie, that's been amazing. And I think the last question that I have for you is really about how you coped. I always ask this question because I'm just intrigued about how people cope during lockdown. Like, you know, it was such a game-changing event, you know, deaths, all sorts of things going on. It's like, how did you, you know, for yourself and for your business as well?
Well, for myself, at the beginning, as we were going into it, I thought, no, this is nothing. This is not going to be anything. I don't know why people are getting so het up about it. And then I went from there to, oh my gosh, this is a crisis. The end of the world is coming. Oh my gosh, this is what's going to happen to our business. You know, bit of a mental drama in the mind. And then I just thought, okay, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? How are we going to guide people through this? Because we've obviously got, we've got a ship to steer. So we've got to get all of our landlords through it, all of our tenants through it, all of our students through it who are running their own rent-to-rent businesses. So really we started having these regular meetings just to talk about what's the plan, what's the contingency, what can we do, and really to step up in terms of the communication. So we were writing to our landlords from, this all happened the 23rd of March in the UK, and so the 1st of April Fool's Day was our first rent was due to the landlords. So before that we wrote to them explaining what our position was, and we wrote to them every month after that until it's all started to ease off.
Because I imagine that you had people moving out and different
things. Yes. Okay. Yes. So we actually, that was hard because we just mentally seeing the voids, because we've always, the reason why we can offer the guaranteed rent is because we do it good. We're on it in terms of the systems that we use and fill in the rooms, and you know our void rate was, you know, is under 1%, and so that was hard because it went up to, at one stage it was at 20% of all our rooms, so like 20 rooms empty over, and that was hard because I mean financially we'd already done the model, so we knew that we could get through and still pay. But not, although we didn't know how, you know, we thought we need it to come back, because if it came back we knew we'd be fine, but if this lockdown had said a year, then
who can survive?
So what we did there was we just put the mindset on, okay, we can only do what we're able to do right now. So we thought, how could we fill these rooms in another way? And there's lots of other ways: emergency housing, key workers. There were a few connections with the council where we could, but we decided we didn't feel we could do that because our properties are all partially tenanted, mm-hmm. and those people are scared as well.
Yes, because you have that, you can't commingle with other people who, you know, at least during the lockdown. Yeah. So,
well, you could have had people moving in at that time, because you can move if you've got to move, like for home, you know, you could have done, but we didn't want to put high risk people in, you know, with other people.
Yes.
So basically what we just had to do was just to get through that, get to where, just keep on it with the advertising the rooms. And as soon as the markets came back, what we found was a lot of the other agents were not on it because they were on furlough or whatever. So we actually then started to be able to fill our rooms. And actually, we've been so lucky because there's been lots of employment around here. People have been moving here, hundreds of people for different roles at different places. And so we're almost back to full occupancy again. Mm-hmm. And that is, so you come out of all these things stronger, yes. I think. Yeah. One of the things that I'm most proud of, when we went into it, we just said, whatever we do in this, we want to come out of it exceptional. We want to come out of it proud of whatever we've had to do. Like if we have had to let properties go, we want to be proud of the way that we have done that. Yes. Luckily, it all recovered and we didn't have to. But we got those three properties as a direct result of lockdown because we were able to stand up and say, this is how we deal with a crisis. We're going to communicate with you. We're still going to pay you as normal. And if there's any change, we're going to let you know way in advance. And he took three of his properties from somebody else and moved them over to us.
Well done. And that's the whole thing, isn't it? I've been saying through the experience that if we enjoyed the good times, and therefore when the bad times come, you just need to have that tenacity and that strength to get through it, because we are lifers in a sense. We are, you know, like we are in this, you know, property space. So it's not like you can just hang up the keys and say, oh, well, it didn't work out because, you know, the sort of strategies are impacted. No, you kind of need to make sure you make it work and then tap into that strength to just come up with creative solutions, right?
Yes.
And go through it. So, yeah. Fantastic, Stephanie. It was really good having you on. And I know my audience will definitely get lots of value from it. And looking forward to hearing more about your successes, the new projects that you have coming on. All the best. Because as you scale up and you go on with growing your business as well.
Thanks, Dolly. It's been amazing to be on. And keep doing the good work.
I must say, I loved interviewing Stephanie. Just that easy nature, good-natured attitude she has that still helps her to be so successful within this industry. She is someone who is passionate about what she does. She connects with quite a lot of people and is well recognized, and it is definitely a property game changer. So well done, Stephanie. And for you, if you are looking to quit your day job and start to progress within property, then do always listen to this podcast. I'm constantly interviewing people as well as dropping experiences that I've had. You can check out my website for blogs where I talk about different aspects of property investing, and that's at www.propertymom.co.uk. So until the next episode, do stay safe, build assets, and let's make an impact.